Welcome to the full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:46 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 18th. Well, there is a lot to talk about today, and I think the best way to do it is to cycle through a lot of different charts. Well, first off, let's have a look at oil, because it was up $1.83 on Brent crude. So that's a pretty impressive rebound, considering that it had pulled back in a dynamic manner on Friday. So this is still a two-way market, and we're getting some backing and filling. And so far, this reality is that the market has been pulling back for a month already, but the size of the reaction has been pretty much limited to approximately $7. So it's not quite as large as the approximately $10 reaction that we had back in January and February, but it does look like we are in a more of a reversionary kind of environment. Well, we haven't had quite as much of a reversion on Brent crude as we have had on West Texas Intermediate. And WTI is bouncing from the region of the trend mean. That's not the right chart. West Texas Intermediate had pulled back quite a bit more than Brent crude, and it is now bouncing. Well, what is interesting about this is, on the one hand, there is the prospect that the U.S. is going to be increasing its supply, that OPEC is not going to increase its supply by as much as people had perhaps been anticipating, and that Russia is on the cusp of increasing supply by a couple of 100,000 barrels, which in the scale of the global oil environment is really not all that much. So it remains within the context of this increasingly choppy but still reasonably consistent advance. And as long as oil prices are holding the region of the trend mean, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. There is talk that perhaps U.S. exports of oil will be included in Chinese tariffs, but so far there's been no talk of them including gas in those tariffs. But today gas was notable because it had a downside key reversal from around that $3 level. Well, when we look at it over a much longer time frame, we can see that it's been confined to this very volatile range between approximately $2 and $6 since approximately 2009. That is a graphic illustration of just how powerful the advent of shale gas has been for the market. And it holds out the prospect that that is what we can expect from oil prices over the long term. But rather than from 2 to 6, it'll probably be more like from about $35 to $100 in amplitude for oil's range. Well, the dollar continues to strengthen, and the renminbi was not updated today, but that was a reasonably dynamic move that we had on Friday on behalf of the dollar. The Asia dollar index is back below the trend mean, and that is heavily weighted by the renminbi, but there are a number of additional currencies which are worth considering, and most particularly the Korean won, because it had been so very steady against the dollar for all of this year, but now it is breaking lower, and also the Singapore dollar, which had been reasonably steady, but now it is the dollar is bouncing from the region of the trend mean last week and improving upon that performance in here this week. Well, this looks like a big first step above that base put in between 2011 and 2014. When we look at the very long term, then the Singapore dollar has been appreciating against the US dollar for an awfully long time already, but it does look like 120 is about as strong as it's going to get. And now there is the prospect of additional US dollar strength in here. Well, when we look at, for example, the Thai baht, then we get a similar story, that there is incredible commonality now for the dollar rallying against just about everything. Well, when you start looking then at the performance of some of the respective stock market indices, the Thai index is breaking lower. The Indonesian market has been closed for more than 10 days because of the Eid holiday, so it won't open up again until June 21st, but we can anticipate that it will probably be breaking down when it does. If we look at, for example, the Singaporean market. With the weakness of the Singapore dollar, the index was at a new reaction low in here today. So we're seeing a quite concerted move out of emerging markets, even though South Korea and Singapore could not really be considered emerging markets. They are Asian markets, and there is certainly when we look at the MSCI Emerging Markets Index, then it has a very similar trajectory to the H share index, except that it's now leading on the downside. And the H shares are right in the region of the lower side of their range, and this is around the region of the trend mean. Well, on previous occasions, it's bounced, and it's going to have to bounce again tomorrow if this region is going to hold. When we look at the mainland market in China, then it broke to new reaction lows in here today. Now, it didn't close on those lows, but this still remains a downtrending environment. We have lower highs and lower lows, and it is going to at least have to sustain a move back above the trend mean to question the downward bias. So certainly Asia is experiencing some selling pressure, but it's certainly not limited to Asia because of the strength of the US dollar. When we look at, for example, the outlook for some of these Eastern European countries, the Polish market is trending lower. The Czech market was also at a new reaction low in here today and is breaking back below the trend mean. Well, the Polish zloty is rather tied to the euro, and but then when we also look at, for example, the Russian 10-year government bond yields, and I haven't typed that very well. So when we look at those yields, what the yield says to me at least is that this is a first step above the base, and that there is potential here for, and considering that Russian 10-year yields are less than 5%, that suggests that there's not an awful lot of risk being priced into that particular market. Despite the fact that Russia is increasing its supply, then the dollar also has first step above the base characteristics against the ruble. When we look at other commodity-related currencies, and the South African rand continues to extend its decline against the dollar, the Brazilian real is in really quite a similar condition, that it has paused, but not much more than a pause. And so far, the four area is holding, but so neither is this bounce that we've had being capitalized upon. Then, when we look at the Argentine peso, it has deteriorated really quite considerably over the last couple of months, and it remains to be seen over the course of this week whether their auction of new bonds is going to get taken up. At 40% interest rates, one would have to be really very bearish indeed to think that that kind of interest rate isn't going to gain traction among yield-hungry investors. But we're in a more risky kind of environment at the present moment. But I think from the perspective of commodity-related currencies, the weakness of the Australian dollar, where it is now back testing its lows, and it confirmed resistance in the region of the trend mean last week, well, this is a meaningful move. And the New Zealand dollar is also looking like it is going to weaken further from here. And then stringing them together, we look at the Canadian dollar. We can see a similar pattern here, where the US dollar has held its progression of higher reaction lows over the course of the last year and is breaking out to new highs right now. Well, on the one hand, you have emerging markets where people generally tend to want to see currency market appreciation before they are willing to invest. So, when the currencies start to deteriorate, they start pulling their money out. They have a rather spoiled, or international investors like to be spoiled, probably a better way of thinking about it. They like to have currency market and capital market appreciation, and if they can pick up yield along the way, well, even better. But then, when we think about the outlook for other markets, well, it's not so much that inflation is the problem. So then when we look at, for example, the Canadian market, the TSX remains really quite firm and is pushing on to new high ground, and it's been aimed, or it, I think it's being aided by the weakness of the loonie. And it's a reasonably similar story for the ASX 200 in Australia, where it is bouncing from the 6,000 level, and it's being aided in nominal terms by the weakness of the currency. Well, of course, the market that is most associated with nominal price appreciation when the currency weakens is the Japanese market, and the Nikkei has encountered resistance around the 23,000 level, so we're getting some pause and consolidation in here. The second section was down in a more dynamic manner in here today, so it also suggests that the market is in for a bit of a pause. And when we look at the yen, well, it is pausing. But the outlook here continues to, I think, favor dollar dominance as long as that low around 108 continues to hold. And when we look at it on a weekly basis, we can, I think, get some confirmation that at least the dollar is now supporting this move above the trend mean. And as long as it's doing that, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Well, the other market that tends to do better in nominal terms when the currency is deteriorating is Europe, and the euro today was pretty much unchanged, but that was a whopping downward dynamic last week, and it confirmed resistance in the region of the trend mean. So when we look at the European markets, there are plenty of things to worry about, but the currency is unlikely to be one of them for the time being. And what it suggests is that if one did have to worry about something in Europe, it's probably the banking sector. That the Italians have an awful lot of debt that need to be refinanced this year. The Euro Stoxx Banks Index is heavily weighted by French, Italian, and Spanish banks. There are really only two German-listed banks still in the index, and really, who knows for how much longer? Well, the Italians are thinking about breaking the fiscal compact for the euro, and that is a risk that is outstanding for their government bonds, and it's also a risk for their banking sector. But this is not a bullish chart, and when we look at the medium-term outlook for the European banking sector, it has clearly broken the upward bias evident since the middle of 2016. It has pulled back very emphatically from the region of the trend mean, and now it is steadying. So far, there has been a distinct lack of upward dynamics. So, in the absence of those clear upward dynamics, we have to conclude that this is a distribution and that there is potential for additional downside in the European banking sector. So, that's, I think, where some of the risks are outstanding. It's mostly in Europe and indeed in China, and the dollar's rally is putting pressure on a lot of different markets. So, if the dollar is rallying, what about what's going on with Wall Street? Well, the S&P 500 was pretty much unchanged in here today, and was able to close off the low, despite the fact that it had gapped lower over the weekend. But there's been a distinct lack of downward dynamics similar to what we saw back in February and March. This looks like a consolidation in the region of those peaks, but probably not much more than that. And as long as that remains the case, as long as we do not get very clear downward dynamics, then this looks like a consolidation. And when we look at the Nasdaq, then we can also see that it was down just four today, and down four on a 7,000-point index is really not very much. This continues to look like a consolidation in the region of the previous peak, but in fact above the previous peak. We had a very clear downward dynamic. In fact, it was a downside key reversal in the middle of March to confirm that we had seen another short-term peak. So far, there's no real sign of that here right now. I tend to consider Tesla as a bit of a canary in the coal mine. They're burning money, and they have continually not been able to sustain their production figures, and the prospect of profits have been ephemeral. But they are very good at making promises, and they are so far ramping up production. And we don't know how long they'll be able to sustain that 5,000 a week production quota, but so far the outlook has certainly turned more positive. We've had a short covering rally, and the share is now breaking its progression of lower rally highs. Well, the one thing that Tesla has going for it is that it tends to benefit from the incredibly low interest rates that we have right now, and access to abundant funding. And as long as that is the background environment that we're seeing in the markets, well, Tesla's probably going to be okay. If, on the other hand, we see that really credit conditions get tighter, well, it's going to be in a triple C rated credit like Tesla that we're going to see some of the first influence of that. So I do tend to think of it as the canary in the coal mine, and so far that canary is still singing. And Netflix perhaps has a somewhat better path to profitability, although we are still talking about something that has a PE in the triple digits. But so far the share has been really quite steady. And of course, when we think about what the risks are, well, the risks are from trade wars. And who is it that are going to be most, I think, affected by trade wars? Well, it's going to be China, it's going to be the emerging markets, it's going to be Europe. That Europe does more trade with China than the USA does. And the leading shares that are breaking higher and represent relative strength in this environment on Wall Street are not particularly affected by any kind of tariff that China can put on the USA. Google doesn't really have a presence in China, although they did sign I think it was a $500 million agreement with JD.com just in here today. But I think perhaps more important than that is that the share was up in a dynamic manner, and it is now closing back in the region of the peak from January. This has been a very impressive rebound from the $1,000 area, and if it can push on to new high ground, well, then we would have to conclude that this larger pullback we've seen, in fact, the largest pullback we've seen in almost a decade, was just that, just a somewhat larger pullback in the context of still a staircase step sequence uptrend. So then we also have to think about the degrees of separation from the risk. Well, part of the risk, where the risk is highest, is in the commodity sector. And gold pulled back very sharply last Friday, and it was pretty much unchanged in here today. Silver was down by about 18 cents, but finished out the day pretty much unchanged relative to. In fact, it was not down 18 cents. I was probably looking at something else when I was before I picked up. Excuse me, it was nickel that was down 18 cents. Excuse me. Nickel was down a little, and considering that it had rallied impressively in May, then we're getting some pause and consolidation in the region of that April peak. But this remains, I think, still a reasonably consistent advance. Copper prices had rallied very impressively at the beginning of last week and then gave up all of the advance into the last few days of last week. So now it is back testing the region of the trend mean. This is where support is going to have to be found if the benefit of the doubt is going to be given to the upside. So on the one hand, we know that there is a deteriorating trading environment between the USA and China, but at the same time, neither wants to impact their economy to any great extent. And China is a vociferous consumer of commodities. And the reality is that outside the agricultural sector, the USA is not a big producer of things like copper and nickel. But it is a big producer of soybeans. And soybeans have pulled back really very sharply. They are right back down on the region of the 2017 lows. So this is a potential area of support, and there is a clear overextension relative to the trend mean, that it is really oversold on just about any measure one might wish to think about. Rough rice is in a very similar condition. The USA is one of the biggest exporters of rice. And I find that very interesting, that when I look at when I did the click through this morning, I think it was rough rice was the one that had been pulling back, but that's not at all the case. So I know that it's palm oil. Palm oil is the one that's next to rough rice on my list. I wrote the wrong one down. Palm oil is right back down on its lows. Rough rice has bounced rather emphatically. So that's interesting, that when we think about what the kind of moves that China could do, they've put sanctions on soybeans and not on rough rice. Rough rice is the rice area of the USA is primarily in the south, in Texas and the Gulf bordering states. But this is a clear move on the upside, and that's, I think, a really very impressive short covering rally. The other commodity that has been doing well recently was cotton, but cotton prices had rallied to a point where they were susceptible to some pause of consolidation, and now they are getting it. Well, when we think about then where are the risks, well, it does look like there is risk of volatility in the agricultural commodities, but when we look at, for example, the LME metals index, which is comprised of all of the all of the industrial metals, then it still holds this progression of higher reaction lows. And as long as it is doing that, then this remains a reasonably benign environment. But of course, in the event that it's broken, well, then we would have to reconsider that statement. So I think that we are still in a more risky environment, but we can also see that there are clear winners and losers. And when we think about it in those terms, we have ample evidence from the stock market performance where those winners and losers are, that Wall Street is outperforming by in no uncertain terms, that it is the clear relative strength leader in terms of performance, and it is now getting a tailwind from the currency, so that from the perspective of a foreign investor, that you can buy into Wall Street and also get the currency market appreciation. That's a very powerful argument. When we look at, for example, the World Equity Index page, we can see that the currency adjusted performance of stocks, that just about everything else outside of the Hang Seng, which is linked, which has got a peg to the dollar, and the Nikkei, that everything else is in negative territory for the year, and that is on a currency adjusted basis. So therefore, that is making the argument from the perspective of international investors to think about the NASDAQ as the relative strength leader in no uncertain terms. Well, eventually that's going to roll over. But the other point, of course, is that we are looking at an environment where you can pick up a yield for a 10-year bond in the US dollar for 2.9%. And when you look at the same return in Europe, you can get what is effectively 0.39%. But then if you look at the 2-year in Germany, you're getting negative 0.61%, and in a currency that is unlikely to advance. So you can borrow at very low levels in Europe, and you can carry to the USA and pick up a 300 basis point differential. And that's a very attractive carry trade. And that's not going to last indefinitely. Eventually, that differential is going to close, and there is, I think, potential that we've seen the lows in terms of German yields, but they're still negative on the downside. And that kind of carry trade is the kind of thing that gets pumped into very speculative bets. That it, the from the perspective of a leveraged investor, there is a lot of money to be made when you can pick up that kind of differential. And that is, I think, what is helping to feed the speculative environment that we continue to see on Wall Street. So I think with that, I will leave you for the week, for today, and wish all the best to all of you.